Okay. Hello, guten Tag. And that is all from my German today. Thank you for joining for this talk. First, to give a bit of context about me and the company. So my name is Ivo. I'm from Croatia. I started programming many years ago. I started in the university in 96. My first Linux distribution was Slackware. Anyone knows Slackware? Very good. My first coding was in Pascal. Anybody know? Okay, so really good audience. So there's a lot of years and years, and of course over the years we founded a company 20 years ago, and over the years I got more into managing the company. So I'm no longer a regular daily developer. I do fix bugs that nobody else can fix because it's some very old code. And this is this X Twitter thing, if you are still on it. I'm not sure why I'm on it, but whatever. You can follow me. And we organized the summer camp event, which I will say a few words in a minute. So the NetGen is a web agency in Croatia, around 40 plus people. We do projects in Croatia, but also Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Norway, and a few other places. From the open source perspective, we did a lot of open sourcing in the in various communities, mostly Symfony community. And our biggest thing that we build over the years is NetGen Layouts, which is a Symfony-based component that provides an editor interface and a preview interface to arrange things on the website. And it's already working with a couple of other Symfony systems. You can check on the link if you're interested in that. We do, of course, not to be only developers. We also organize a conference. It's not such a big conference like this one, but it has a very unique things, like it's on the coast of Croatia during summer. That's about the most important thing that you can that I can say about it. We have very focused on workshops, so 2 days of workshops, 1 day is a conference. So if you are interested, it's this year, so in less of a month, right? So I have this code for you if you want to come. I strongly suggest that you come because it's very, very educational, but also fun. So why this topic? Why this legacy topic? I was, like I said, a developer years ago. I did my share of development. I no longer develop, but I constantly on every day communicate with developers because, you know, that we have like 30 plus developers in the company. We also work with other partners or other companies. So I'm kind of exposed to developers' frustrations, let's say it like this. So, and I hear it every day, and it's kind of, I want to help them, you know, to overcome this, because it's reality. You know, reality is that you mostly work on code, which is not the code that you just wrote from scratch. You always dig into someone else's code or your code 5 years ago, and etc. etc. Yesterday I was at Sebastian Bergman talk. He was talking about PHP Foundation, and I asked him, you know, they have like 6 core PHP developers working, right, on the core, funded by the foundation, and I asked him what his, you know, it's very hard to measure, but what is roughly the percentage of time that those 6 people work on, let's say, existing code versus building new features. And he says he's probably wrong. His gut feeling is 50-50%, but then one other PHP core member said it's more like 80-20. But 80 is working on existing code and 20 is working on a new code. So in reality, you can imagine the numbers from your experience, but I would say you work more on your existing code than on the new features. It's also about the definition of what is legacy code, and I will come to that. So before we start to talk about this in more detail, I will tell you a story. It's the story of Zed. Zed is a fictional character, developer. So he is Zed. So he just graduated. He wants to be a developer, of course, and he wants to use new technologies, of course. He did some work as a student, but never finished it. He searches for internship. He wants to use cool new technologies, whatever the buzzword is today. You know, a year ago, it would say blockchain. Right? Nowadays, it will say AI, right? So he doesn't like to work on old technologies. So after 1 month, he got a bit frustrated. Why? So he got the first project. Well, the onboarding took a lot of time because there is, you know, not a lot of documentation, obviously. It took 1 month to actually add a couple of lines of code and get it into production. Not much documentation. One senior left and nobody knows his part, right? He has this what the fuck moment quite often. Whose code is this? He screams. So after a lot of time, finally the business decides, okay, let's go from scratch. You know, years of struggling with old code, legacy code, whatever, it's unmanageable. Let's just do the full rewrite. Ever heard about that? So let's use the new technology. So it's not blockchain, now it's AI. We need to use AI. We said, let's take 1 year, maybe two. Well, let's say 1 year, dedicated team. Then after 1 year, the launch is coming. Looking good. Still some rough edges. Of course, there are some quick fixes. Of course, there is no time to do the proper testing because the marketing campaign is announced, so no time. And then, of course, the business said, oh, but we need this or that, and the CEO comes and, oh, I need this feature because who knows why. But so we are finally live. It went live probably 1 year later than what they planned, but whatever. One of the most important things from what I experienced in 20 years, that whatever you build, it will never survive the first customer. Like survive in terms of go as planned. Because there is always some edge cases, whatever, that you forgot. So you need to take care of it. Edge cases, bug fixes. So it takes time. The backlog grows, right? Because the user demands new feature. Business wants to optimize and monetize and earn more money, so they are adding features, and we get to business as usual, which means after many years and added many, many features, it's more and more obsolete. Obviously, it's no longer blockchain, it's now it's whatever. So something which is coming after AI, I don't know. A lot of compromises. Then the churn happens. Zed says, I'm done. I'm sick and tired of this shit. He become a security guard. Context is lost because he left. And whatever they had now, it's more or less the same they had when he came. Meet Fabien. They hire a new developer because Zed left. She got the first task. she has the same, exactly the same problems. Whose code is this? Zed's. Who's Zed? Do you know? Zed's? Zed's gone in my scenario, it's gone. He's not dead. So it's fictional, but it's not fictional, right? Does it sound familiar? So, returning to the topic, what is legacy code? For example, tell me, some of you, what is for you legacy code? Very good. Everything is legacy code. That's, I'm surprised that I got this answer, because I asked on this ex Twitter thing, and you know, a couple of guys said, you know, that aged badly, badly code that aged badly, code that was written in the past, and all these things. I would say that the perception is like this. It's difficult to change. That would be the let's say the baseline or the average synthesis of what the perception is, right? So it's hard to change it, therefore it's frustrating, etc., etc. I think that's not a good definition. In my book, what I preach is this. Lose this. Whatever generates value is actually legacy code. Or, to be more blunt, everything that is in production is legacy code. Imagine the apple, right? It grows, you write code. Once it went live, you pick the apple, it starts to rot. Why? Well, that's, I will explain it. Actually, my definition is every code that's raising technical debt is legacy code. You need to treat it as such. So, which means as soon as you put it in production, the technical debt will grow. And therefore, you need to treat it as legacy code. And that also liberates you, because whatever there is no difference between the code that is old 1 month or code that is 20 years old. It's just working code in production. That's why I would say it's working code, it's not legacy code. This is very related, but this is a very huge topic which I will not go into. What I will just say regarding technical debt, that how it, you know, what kind of technical debt there are. And this is how I see it. So as soon as you put something in production, the technical debt will grow intrinsically and externally, which means intrinsically is because people forget or they leave. So you have things happening in the team, even without touching code, it will start rotting because you're losing context very slowly, and then someone goes away like Zed and you lose the context very heavily. Or there are external factors, you know. Every code today that you write is highly dependent on many other libraries and components and frameworks and whatever, and they change. So because you are not updating or upgrading, you are rotting. Because, you know, this one library, I don't know, requires a new version of a runtime, and you didn't update your code, so you cannot upgrade. And these interdependencies cause technical debt, right? And then, as soon as you touch the code, basically add features, you increase the technical debt. And here, intrinsic is also what I forget, is all the bugs. So if you don't touch the code, if there are bugs, that's technical debt, so you need to take care of them. Of course, if you are going too fast, the technical debt will grow faster, You know, adding features fast means bigger technical debt, because if you go fast, you usually don't do things like tests or whatever, because you don't have time. So that's the, for me, that's the technical debt, basically. Without even explaining what the technical debt is, you can always figure this thing. So, and then there is business, who will always prioritize new features, right? Instead of maintaining the code. It will always, it's like, it's natural. You know, I need new features. I don't care about maintaining code. I thought you are a good developer. How come you have bugs? How come you this code is not upgraded by itself or whatever? So it will increase for many reasons, and then you need to pay that debt by actively maintaining the code all the time. So, for example, here you had this, and then you did some upgrade, and it got better a bit, but then start rotting again. Here you catch the deadline, but then someone said, okay, we need to clean up, and then it started again, bug fixing, and then one more cleanup, or adding tests and whatever, but there is always technical debt. You cannot be technical debt zero. That's not possible. Actually, there is. Stop using the code. That's technical debt zero. That's actually very important, because this is the reason why you should always consider, do I need to write code at all? Can I use something else instead of me writing the code? There is so much code written in last, whatever, 30 years, 40 years. It's billions of lines of code. Why do I need to write this code? I need to have a good excuse. Why? Because it will cause technical debt. The more code you add, the more technical debt. This is what I hear from developers every day, and I call that a box of misconceptions. So, yeah, I just write code. What do you think? Is your job just writing code? Sorry? Of course, engineering is, in a broader sense, solving the problem. But one of the actions of the engineer is to actually write code, or developer part of the engineering is to write code. But it's not just writing code. It's so much more. And I know documenting is boring. I know. Upgrading, refactoring, writing tests, mentoring other people on the team, whatever. So there's so many things that the developer needs to do to actually write code or accept writing code. If you don't do it, the technical debt will grow. So that's 100% true. You should have enough time to do the controlling. So let's imagine this. So this garden here, do you see that this has gardeners working every day, basically? That's why the garden looks like this. Imagine that they stopped gardening for 6 months. This would be a jungle, unrecognizable. You couldn't go through it, right? So that is something that, for me, it's similar. You need to work on the code constantly to be up to date. The other thing, what is kind of always misconception, is that, you know, the technical debt, or more precisely the legacy code, it equals code shittiness. So every other code or every old code is shit. Oh, look like, oh, how could he or she work code this thing? On the comment, I see, do not touch this, or on the comment, it says, you know, change by whoever because of blah blah blah, and then you have a super complex function, and then okay, this is shit code, and that's the perception. This is what you deal with. Then they say, okay, this doesn't look good because I would have written it differently. Doesn't match my personal preferences. And these terms, when you talk about technical debt, and especially legacy has a very, very bad connotation or very bad perception. When you start talking about legacy code to people, they turn white a bit because they don't want to do it. That's the truth. So that's actually reinforcing. So it's kind of a vicious cycle in terms of that you don't want to do it, and then actually by not doing it, you make it worse. So you need to break the vicious cycle. Yeah, one more perception. Misconception. You know, I just write it and I'm done. You know, I'm done. I just go build it and go away. But compare the time that you build something to the time that it actually is being used. I mean, there is still software running for 40 years in some old systems. And so actually the building time is shorter, way shorter than the using time. And it's actually very easy just to write something and then you're off to a new project. That's super easy. I also don't think it's good for that developer. That's the hard part. You know, once you build it, you need to maintain it, you need to handle all the users and customers and stakeholders, whatever, with all their wishes, because there will be new features, there will be bugs, there will be all that. The TCO is way bigger than the initial cost. That's the, yeah. Legacy code is bad code in general. That's also what I hear from developers. I would say that it's perceived that it's bad architectured, that it's not covered by tests, that is not documented well. All these things, you know, you can imagine. But don't blame these developers. You know, there is, I know there is this comment called blame, but sometimes it's you. So you get blame it and realize, oh, this is what I wrote 1 year ago. So, you know, what was I thinking? You know, but the thing is that the code, the working code, was modified, changed, adapted, glued, neglected, all these things, and it survives real world users. Now that's the crucial part. And it got used in a way that was not even expected. So it was then changed, adapted. And that's the thing. There's a huge knowledge in that code. Why? Oops, it works. That's infinitely better than your new code, which you write that minute in your local machine. The working code is infinitely better because it serves the purpose. Your new code is still not serving the purpose. Now that's a huge thing. That's what people forget. Oh, it's bad code. No, it's working code. It actually is being used. That's why it's infinitely better. Whatever you create new, start refactoring using the best new technologies, if it's not used, it's not working code. So, you know, that code got somehow, and you don't know the context. You don't know if the developers were pushed by the business because of the deadlines. Did they know some things that they learned later? That's the problem. You don't know the context. So it got somehow, and it's written, but it's used, and it's working. Maybe with bugs, but it's working. Maybe it's not documented, but it's working. Maybe the code is highly readable, or not readable, but it's working. Yep. Yeah. A bit more Pulp Fiction. Yeah. Best intentions. That's what usually comes to or happens. And then, you know, my code is perfect. Do you think when you write code that your code is the best code that could be written in that moment? I got this feeling many times before. No code will ever be perfect, maybe except the code that took man on the moon and back. That's quite a perfect code, I would say. whatever you code you write today, if it got to production, you will need to maintain it, improve it, adapt it, change it, whatever. This is what I found about the only good definition of if we even try to divide good and bad code, it's the what the fuck per minute. That's why code review is quite important. And we do a lot of code, not enough what I would say, but we try to do a lot of code reviews. Even for, seniors reviewing seniors, or even juniors reviewing seniors. Why not? There is no ego, or there shouldn't be an ego thing. You need to code review, and then measure the what the fuck per minute. Yes, I know. I've been there. I look at this every day with other people. I know it's annoying as hell. I know, but try to be a bit more philosophical, like I am, about this. Try and make it a challenge. Don't judge the people that wrote the code. Don't judge. You don't know the context of where they've been. One of my colleagues called this code archaeology. Be the Indiana Jones digging into the trenches of things, the code that was not touched for 10 years. It's kind of exciting, you know. Oh, I'll just remove this line or change this line and everything breaks. So it's quite exciting changing old code, especially if everything breaks and you got the calls. You know, what did you do? It said in the comment, do not touch. Why did you touch it? This is also a good thing. As soon as you open a function or a file of code, the rule is, you leave it better. So you check it and then, okay, I can do this a bit better and then fix it. So Boy Scout rule, whatever, for any reason you open a file, don't just close it, try to improve it. And the famous, let's just do the full rewrite. Yes, of course, I will not go into saying that you should do it or not do it. What I would say is that almost always it's more efficient that you change what you have and not doing the full rewrite. Because I saw a lot of full rewrites. They have like at least 4 to 5 times more time and resources needed to get done than it was estimated. I would say the factor is 4 to 5. They thought 2 years, it took 8. You know, and you also know some of the bigger systems that did full rewrites, like Magento from 1 to 2. That's a major rewrite. And I don't know how long they took him. It was years and years. They planned maybe 2. It took them, who knows. And other examples as well. But there is, of course, if you get in a state that the technical debt is so high, it's practically, you cannot do anything with it anymore. Of course, you need to do the full rewrite. So, yes, of course, the full rewrites are, you know, sometimes you need to do it, right? But there is one important thing regarding that. It's not about technology. People think it's about technology. Oh, we will use this new XY technology, but it's about people. If the same people do the same thing, you will get into the same shit. It's garbage in, garbage out. Right? So be careful about full rewrites. I know it's after lunch, so it's. I see that maybe we should have done a bit of exercise before. But did you do the all? You all did the coffee, yes? Okay. So my box of appreciation in terms of what I need to do in my head and change my perception is, we need to work on the code, on, you know, documenting, of course, tests. Any kind of tests, whatever, upgrading, removing dead and unused code, refactoring, making it basically easier to change. That's the main focus. So that's all, you know, that's the usual what happens. And then the bus hits him. So, you know, try to preach or to reward in some way developers that are actually like to do this, like to do code archaeologies and stuff like that. And of course, the documenting definitely. And regarding refactoring, don't do full rewrites, but what you can always do is gradually, in smaller steps, go further. Of course, it's very hard to do it and to sell this to business, you know, oh, we need to do it. Of course, it's hard. I will say a couple of things about that in a couple of minutes, but you can start with just using the tools. I mean, there's plenty of tools that you can start using on the old code which was not used, just to kind of try to make it a grasp of it, or try to see what's the size of it, how, you know, where to try start making small fixes, you know, trying to update it, not even changing the functionality, just try the code, try to make the code better or easier to read. That's an important thing. There is this thing, or it's either 3 whys or 5 whys or whatever, there's this rule about trying always to say, okay, why we did this? And then you get the answer. And then, yes, okay, but why actually was this done? And then go to the root of why. Because you need to understand the feature. And if you have old code and nobody understands how it works and why it was even written, you need to find out. You cannot just blindly change the code. You need to go back and say, okay, why is this working? And then, okay, but why? What's the reason behind this code? So you need to find out about this, and that's not an easy task, because context is probably lost. People left the company, and you don't, and there is no documentation, of course. So it's very hard to find the why, the root cause. Of course, this requires that the communication between the IT and business is clear. So in terms of, oh, you ask one question, and then the business says yes, but blah, 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 and then the communication is lost there. So you need to be you're communicating really clearly what should be done. And this is one of the most important also things that I learned is, you have a function says function analyze. What's the most probable comment for that function? Function is doing analyze. Like that's zero knowledge there. So what you need to actually write is not what the function does, you need to write why was this code written in the first place. That's the most useful thing for someone 10 years or after when he needs to maintain that code. Why, not what, not when. Why did you write that function? Then practice what ifs. This is very important. So, what if this guy leaves? What do we do? And there was this yesterday at the Sebastian talk, he was talking about PHP Foundation and why it was founded. And the reason why it was founded was because in 2020 or 21, majority of the code of the whole PHP core, now that's not a small project, was written by two guys. So they had a bus factor of two. And they realized, okay, and one of those guys was finishing his studies. So he could just say, okay, I'm going to work for whatever, Microsoft. And then they say, okay, we need to do something because, too much is based on those two guys. So that's why they finally founded the PHP Foundation. Now they have six people working, mostly working on the code, funded by the foundation. So this is one of the most important what ifs is for each developer. What if this guy leaves? For example, could I remove this part of the code and replace it with some library maybe? Because just to reduce the number of or lines that you need to maintain, what if I could use a library instead? Or vice versa, maybe there is this small JavaScript thing with only two lines of code which I depend on. Maybe I can just copy paste it and don't depend on external dependency just because of two lines of code. You know what happened 2 years ago or three, when was that? Yeah. It was this one small piece of JavaScript code which broke half of the internet. What if we remove this dependency? I need to put something with ChatGPT, sorry. So maybe I could write a documentation with ChatGPT, what? And this is coming to the most important things is that maintenance or the code maintenance is hard to sell to the business. That's basically all over. Some of the businesses will say, okay, we will give you 20% of your time to maintain a code. This can happen, but usually most businesses, I would say, they don't like to do it. So what you need to do is you really, really need to communicate about the risks, I would say. That's the most important thing. You need to scare them, basically. You need to scare them. What if we don't maintain the code? What could happen? And you need to say to them, the risk is also that whatever new feature or change you need to do, it will get harder and harder if we don't maintain the code. And this is a bit hard to sell. I mean, everything is hard to sell regarding that, but it's good to go back to the what ifs and then tell them, look, if this guy goes, we will lose 6 months, basically. Or things like that. Be very, very direct about it and say, look, we need to do this, otherwise we are in deep shit. That's the only way how the business will allocate resources for maintenance. A couple of final things before your questions, hopefully. Don't judge on the developers that wrote code before. You don't know the context why they wrote that code. Don't be frustrated with it. It's much better. It's not legacy code, it's working code. Remember, even if it's very shitty, very old, and it takes 2 days to change one line, try not to be frustrated about it. I would say that if you don't regularly maintain the code, you are not a complete software engineer. If you just write new code, you are missing many, many things. That's my opinion. Maybe you agree or not agree, but I think that's the truth. And you will probably, and that's very important also to say to the business, is that by regularly maintaining the code and adding new features easily to existing code, you will have bigger impact than if you have a new side or greenfield project, which you never know it will go live. And if it goes live, maybe it just will not happen or it will be closed, whatever. So it's more important that you work on your existing code than on a greenfield project. I know it's a weird claim, but I would say that from my experience, that's how I think. Yeah, try to find joy in it. I have people a couple of my developers, they rather improve existing code than write new code. It's more fun for them. At least they can joke about it. We have a Slack channel, coding what the fuck. And then you have a lot of stuff there, which is very, very funny. And educational, of course. I mean, humor can help in the educational way. And I will leave you with a bit of German. And for the non-Germans, it basically means, while you are maintaining the code, do not do the same mistake and make it worse. So don't make it worse. That's basically what this old guy said many years ago, even though he was not a developer. So that's from me. Any questions from the audience? You are still sleepy, or?
Thanks for your presentation. I especially love the kind of the Boy Scout rule. I've never heard that in that form. It's fantastic. But I think one addition, if you look at kind of old projects like the Linux kernel or like Mozilla, something I've been working on for ages, that have kind of a very long kind of Git history or whatever, CVS back in the days, but then it was imported. So you can do kind of, you get the evolution of the code, yeah. But you also, and I think that's something we're often missing these days, is you get, for example, all Bugzilla entries from 20 years ago, where people discussed not the end result only, but also the way to get there. And I think what I see in, for example, my corporate context, very often you discuss stuff on Slack, in private messages, on the office floor, wherever, and that's lost. All that context is lost. So I think we need to be very careful to make sure that we talk about the code in a way that it's archived for a long time, and that's not just 2 years, because after, I don't know, 2 years it's not going to be Slack, but whatever else. Yeah. But kind of keep that knowledge somewhere.
Yeah, that's the hard thing. I mean, of course, it's Linux is a big open source thing with all the communication done on the platforms and preserved because of that. But of course, Linux, that's one example. But the other example, or the contra example, would be some code in a company which, you know, is 20 years building software and there is no internal process of preserving that. Maybe they don't do any proper, I don't know, tasks in Jira or whoever software. I'm sorry. So, yes, it's hard to preserve that knowledge. That's why I said that's why the technical depth is always growing, because there is always some context lost. You know, in a normal project, there are some. I mean, Linux kernel is quite special project. It's not an average project, right? If you think about it. So if I talk about an average project, I would say that there is always some context lost. Always. It's not possible or in realistic that you will write everything down. And you know, if you have someone new coming to the team, he needs time to onboard, right? And it will take a lot of time, because there is no way, a single way, that he can just go read everything and then he knows everything. That's not possible. I mean, I never experienced anything like that. So there is always context loss. But you need to then take care of the trying to, by actively maintaining the code, you also, this also means that, okay, this is missing as a documentation, add the documentation, like going back and say, aha, this was done by because of that, and then write it down. That's why this, you know, last quote. The last quote is about, if you fix something, you need to document it and you need to maintain that fix. Like, don't become the thing that was before. That's the hard part. Yeah.
Regarding his question, there was a talk a few years ago on the FrostCon, which was named Inner Source.
Yep.
It was applying open source tools or workflow onto commercial projects.
Yep.
And one thing they said was use mailing lists for your project. So when a colleague is on vacation or a colleague is lost, is gone, you can view the mailing list in a few years ago and can see why was a change made. Where is the discussion? I think probably this would be a solution to your question.
Yeah. I mean, what we do is relatively simple. So we use Jira internally for all the issues or all the work. And we have a rule on when you do a Git commit, so we have a hook that you need to put the Jira ticket in the beginning of commit, which is forcing everyone to always connect any code change to the Jira task. It's a small thing. It will not solve everything, but it's a small thing that really helps later. You know, 1 year after, you can go both ways. You can go in Jira, find it in Jira and find the change code, or you can go into the code and later go to Jira and find the discussion there. So it's a super simple thing, but helps because we as developers are lazy basically. So we like coding. We don't like commenting. Well, a natural language is not natural for us. C or C++ or Perl or JavaScript or whatever. That's natural for us. Or Erlang, whatever. So this is natural for us. And the natural language is not natural to us, so that's why we don't like documenting or commenting, at least on average.
Yeah. Is it on?
Yeah.
Is it on? Okay. Many thanks. I enjoyed the presentation very much. I'd like to catch up both questions. To the first question, I've done a case study on a very old project that began about 2000, and I was curious about how the architecture evolved. And one thing that I learned was I did a static code analysis, and after that I didn't know much more. And then I realized, okay, the knowledge is not inside the code itself. The knowledge is in the heads of the developers. And then I decided to do some interviews, and those interviews, wow, it was like the whole history was conserved in the heads of the developers. And regarding how we can kind of maintain such knowledge, I don't know if some of you heard about architecture decision records. It's a kind of simple text files where you can log decisions that concern the architecture, and you do some pro and contra, and document why this decision has been set, and what are the consequences.
Yeah, I mean, it could be just a text file in your repository where you write things that are important. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm.
Hi, thank you for your talk. I enjoyed it a lot. When I'm working with younger folks, I normally use the approach reduce, reuse, recycle as an approach, a philosophical approach, mm-hmm. to get them in the mindset that, yes, the code is there, we produce code, but sometimes we need to maybe maintain it and change it so it can work for the future,
yeah.
which means looking at our old past, which might be quite pollutive.
Yes.
As you said, there is a business aspect that we need to scare people who fund our projects to be able to have this, how can I say, time to do this reduce, reuse, recycle approach, just like in the real world.
Yeah.
Do you have, from your battle experience, any stories or advice to be able to help us to get more time to do these maintenance projects?
Yeah. Well, like I said, one thing is caring, and the other, that's one, let's say, tactic. The other tactic is, covering, which means just say when they come to you, we need new features, and they ask for estimate, and you say 100 hours, but you calculated in, or you covered 20 hours of maintenance in it. It's basically lying, but that's one way. That's why it's not in the presentation. Yeah, but that's maybe that's the only way. Right? Or the business, if they understand this, they will allocate the resources, but not every business is, so you don't need to lie, right? But sometimes you just need to lie. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I have also thought about archiving the decisions we take, and I found that creating a mind map of software, so using free plane or anything like that, mm-hmm. then you can say, okay, these are the next version numbers, and for every version number, you can then put features and bug fixes and all that kind
of like
stuff.
It's like a release note or whatever.
Yeah, basically those you get for free, mm-hmm. and if somebody then comes and changes the priority, then you can move things physically around, and you see that that if somebody puts something on the top, the rest goes down.
Yeah.
But also that file is also in the code repository, so you can go back and forth in it along with the code itself.
Okay. So like you have a timeline of
yes
the changes. Yeah. So there is many ways how you skin a cat or whatever. Well, it's the Chinese proverb. You just need to do it. That's the way. Even if it involves lying.
I mean, yeah. I think it's not even lying. It's kind of part of the software development that you just need to maintain, and that's what you build for effectively.
Yeah.
But kind of you're working for what sounded, I don't know your company, but sounded like a kind of agency style model. So people come to you, say, I need, I don't know, a web shop or whatever. So you deliver them a web shop, and then they come back 2 years later and say, I need the web shop in a new color. So now kind of web frameworks have moved on and things like that. So how do you kind of say to a customer then who only needs kind of a small change to an existing project that kind of disappeared for 2 years, that oh, you can get the small change, we can change the color, but we also actually need to migrate you to whatever and this and that. And
that's the hard part. I mean, this is what I didn't talk also mention is there's a big difference between if you work on a product company and as an agency. Because as an agency, we are paid to do projects, which are, which if they are there working for many years, they are basically products. It's just in the client's head, they think it's project. That's why it's even harder to sell maintenance to them, because there is like, oh, build me a website, right? And then they are like, oh, it's done, right? They are not thinking in a product kind of way. If you're working on a product, you know it's a product. There is no end, right? In your head, there is no head, end. And then you you can easier justify code maintenance, right? But for a build me a website and you are done, it's harder to sell maintenance, because in the client's head, you are done, right? It's like I sold you a potato, 1 kilo of potato, I'm done, right? And it's hard, there is no easy, you know, some clients will say, accept it, yes, okay, fine. Some will don't. And then you will say, look, either you will do a small fix on a very old thing. I mean, I'm running still a shop which is on PHP 5.3, which is no security patches for like 13, 14 years, something like that. I mean, that's life, you know. I know the client is aware of the risk. He says, fine, okay. And somehow it didn't got hacked in 14 years, which was a good call, but it was a lucky call. So it's, you know, sometimes you manage, sometimes you don't. So there is no rule, right, or advice that will work. I think we are done, right? If you have any other questions, I'm still here, so thank you for joining.